Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Ed, look, why don't you try to dial off? Oh, here we go. Well, hello and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking with Mr. Ed Wall, the CEO at a leading cybersecurity firm known as NetShield Corporation, based out in Oshawa, New Hampshire. Ed, thanks for your time, and let's get started, please.
Sounds good. Thank you, Robbie.
Okay. Yeah. Now, we looked up your bio, Ed. It seems like you have a very rich and historical background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us some of the highlights of your career, please?
Sure. My experience in cybersecurity actually was more at the management level. My entire career was based in government work, where I was law enforcement officer for 30 years. And then I was asked started as a state trooper in New Hampshire and a city police officer in Connecticut. Went to Wisconsin, where my wife is from, as a special agent in the Division of Criminal Investigation. Worked my way through the ranks to run the state Division of Criminal Investigation, and was asked by Governor Doyle at the time to head state emergency management. When I went into emergency management, I became involved in the cybersecurity aspect for state systems, sat on the cybersecurity working group for the state, sat on the Governor's Homeland Security Council, and then helped with designing and implementing cybersecurity systems that were going to be implemented across all state agencies. From there, I was asked to be Secretary of the Department of Corrections in Wisconsin, which is the state's largest agency with 10,600 employees. We had 39 institutions, 122 field offices, and 8 regional offices. And again, we had considerable cybersecurity risk factors there, with being able to access or hack into our systems could go as far as to not enable us to open cell doors or anything else. So when I went through my government career and retired, I was asked by a friend of mine to come in to what was called Snoop Wall at the time and help to get the company turned around. The company rebranded to NetShield, which is our primary appliance line, in 2017, and we have got great traction with that, and the company's going well.
Okay. Now, how did you actually venture into it? Was this a company that you actually helped create also on your own, or you had partners?
No, the original CEO and founder had lost his way, if you will, and the board of directors decided to remove him from his position and bought me in to try and turn the company around. It was having some difficulties.
Okay. Now, obviously, there's a meaning behind your company. There's some deeper meaning from a cybersecurity standpoint. Can you elaborate how you picked the name NetShield?
Yeah, I mean, what we typically do is we protect a network. So we shield the network, essentially, and that's where the core name came from the products, was NetShield. We protect the network from the inside out.
Okay, well, sounds interesting. Now, how long have you been in business?
Well, in 2013 is when Snoop Wall was founded as an LLC. We converted to a C-Corp in 2016. And changed the name to NetShield in 2017. So in reality, we've been around for about 5 years.
Well, sounds excellent. Now, do you have a presence in other countries as well, or are you just still based here in the United States?
No, we do. We're being actively sold in 38 countries. We have got primary distributors in Ireland, the UK, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Germany, and then we just signed an exclusive distributorship in Malaysia, Indonesia, and Singapore. We also have distributors in the United States and Canada and Africa.
Okay. Who is your typical customer base that you're trying to target? Is it the small and medium-sized business, the large companies, like the Fortune 500, or could it be a combination of both of these?
We primarily target the SMB, the small, medium-sized businesses, because it's dramatically underprotected. Our products are known for being easy to install, easy to configure. They're quick. Our products are agentless NACs, so network access controllers that don't require you to load endpoint agents on all the endpoints to protect your network. So for the SMB for us is a key market, and in particular, we get a lot of traction in financial institutions, government, healthcare, education, where they're trying to protect smaller networks, but still very important networks.
Okay. Now, how large is NetShield, both like from a revenue standpoint, if you can share the information, and from an employee standpoint?
We're about 15 people. We're about to go into a pretty dramatic growth effort here. We're going into a Series A round of fundraising, where we are going to grow from about 15 to about 60 people by the time we're done. Our revenues are about $1.4 million this year, and according to our projections based on our partnerships, will be increasing dramatically over the next 3 years.
Sounds excellent. Congratulations on that. Now, let's get into your product and service line. It looks like that you have distinct product lines in the Nano 2500/100/254. The Branch Pro, the Enterprise 10/100/250. Could you please elaborate more on products in more detail for our audience, please?
You bet. The Nano is our smaller unit. The number at the end, 25/100 or 254, indicates the number of assets that the appliance will cover. We are moving on the Nano to a license server that's going to allow us to be flexible in the number of end user licenses that we grant for that and the end user devices. So before too long, it's just going to be the Nano, and then we'll configure it on the license server for the number of assets needed to protect. They go up to 254 assets with the Nano 254, and then the Branch Pro, that covers up to 500 assets. That's a bit larger. And then from there, you can scale up to the enterprise size systems, where we have the Enterprise 10/100 and 250, which can protect up to 4,000 assets. And what we see often is in several of our partners will take some time and load a mix of these different appliances. For instance, we just recently closed a deal and installed for Telkom Kenya, the leading cellular provider in Kenya, and they distribute multiple units across their networks so they can configure or control different segments.
Okay. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the features and benefits of these products?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that makes us pretty unique is that we're an agentless NAC. So you can just plug us in typically at the top line switch, and we monitor the network. We look inside at the network, and we like to say we protect the network from the inside out. We monitor the traffic. We don't monitor the endpoint. We don't monitor the asset that's in there. We monitor the traffic that's in there to identify where there are problems. Now, one of the other things that we're doing is we're getting ready to finish the virtualization of our product. We'll be able to introduce it as into virtual machines within a network. And we're also announcing, and I believe it's Monday, a strategic partnership with SiGlass, who we have integrated our products together, and they provide AI. So we're going to have an extra layer of purview looking over the network, looking for anomalous behavior between segments within the network, as well as anything that's coming in or going out.
Do these products come with a software component, or are they all strictly hardware devices?
We manufacture both. So typically the hardware devices have the software component built into them. And once they're up and running, the patches automatically push and load onto the units. But we do have yearly upgrades and renewals, rather, on licensing. So your hardware purchase, your first purchase is what you're going to use to sit on your network. And then from there on, it's just a matter of relicensing. We, as we go toward a virtual machine deployment, then you'll see less. We expect we'll see less of hardware sales and more focused on software sales.
Okay. Now, does your product line help thwart off like malware, ransomware, and other phishing attacks?
Yes, it does. We monitor egress traffic through the span port of the top level switch or at a network tap. It it examines outgoing HTTP requests and checks the URLs against an internal database, usually a Bloom filter, which is a very compact hash table, and it determines how likely it is to be a malware site. If there's any chance that it's a malware site, the appliance will run a confirmation check and then block the asset. And our systems, we update to multiple lists, and one particular list updates every 30 minutes, the other one updates every 3 hours. So it's continually being upgraded and pushing that out to our appliances.
Okay. Now, how can they block against rogue assets? I know it's the better website.
Yeah, there's three techniques that we use. There's an intrinsic block that sends out spoofed ARP packets, making the rogue asset unable to see anything else on the network and making the other network devices unable to see the rogue asset. If the appliance is configured to talk to any switch on the network, it can tell the switch to physically disconnect the rogue asset from the network or move it to a quarantine VLAN. We also use TCP resets to block HTTP connections from endpoints that are attempting to connect to phishing sites. So we have multiple ways of doing it.
Okay. Now, do your products also provide some sort of vulnerability assessments for your customers?
Yes, they do. Our appliances at NetShield run CVE scripts against assets on the network. So as well as running a full audit, it can provide a differential audit to demonstrate what progress has been made in mitigating known vulnerabilities. So the user can configure that for whatever assets to check and how often. The appliance will then generate reports that provide, you know, pretty detailed information about which vulnerabilities are found, on which assets, and a simple workflow to track which have been mitigated so that they can keep track of them.
Okay. Now, do they help quarantine against VLANs also?
Yes. Yep. We use either the ARP block that I had spoke about before or switch block mentioned that I had mentioned earlier, either one.
Okay. Now, as we know, compliance is a big thing here in cybersecurity, and we know that GDPR is one of the biggest legislations that come out. Does your product line help your come into compliance with GDPR?
It does. The NetShield appliances actually address a couple different sections specifically of the GDPR, and we're seeing the GDPR compliance requirements pushing our sales quite heavily, especially over in the EU. But what we try to get out to our customers and our clients is that any company even doing business in the EU that's required to follow the GDPR compliance, they have to also be compliant with it. So we're starting to see that pushback into the U.S. with companies that are working overseas having to put in different appliances. And now they've just recently announced that the GDPR enforcement is going to start levying fines. I think a lot of people who were looking at the GDPR were waiting to see if they were going to actually enforce it, and they recently announced they were, and they've started issuing those fines. The average fine so far has been about $185,000 for a breach.
Wow, that's a pretty steep amount. Hopefully companies will be cognizant of that.
Exactly.
Now, how do your products protect against mobile and IoT-based technologies?
So with NetShield, as I mentioned before, we protect the network, not the endpoints. We don't really care what the device is, just what's going on inside the network. If an unknown mobile or IoT device comes onto the network, it's blocked immediately. If it's a trusted device and that connects to a known malware site, we block the trusted device immediately. So by monitoring the egress traffic and what's going on with the devices, or if it's an unknown device coming on, it's immediately shut down. We have a saying, you either belong or you don't. So if your network is cleared and all of a sudden somebody pops onto your network with be it a phone, an iPad, another computer plugs in, or even you plug in a thumb drive, it's going to see this as a new asset and it's going to block it until it's cleared.
Okay. Now, are these products you actually manufacture on your own, or are you a reseller for another company?
We have them manufactured right here in Nashua, New Hampshire. Continental Resources is our partner. We design all the products. They then do the build-outs of them. They order the components inside. But we build all of our own stuff right here.
Oh, wow. Okay. That sounds incredible. Now, has NetShield done any work with the Internet of Things? I mean, we know that cybersecurity, IoT is the probably the big thing going to be coming out next year. Have you done any work with the general or have any plans of doing anything with it like in the coming year or so?
With which part? I'm sorry.
With the Internet of Things?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, IoT is going to be basically running everything. And with our products, IoT, any IoT device coming out is just another asset. So all that you have to do is either trust or untrust the device. So for instance, if your refrigerator is got IoT capabilities, then you're going to go in and you're going to trust that asset to come on. So even if you trust the asset to come on, if it's a refrigerator, for instance, and all of a sudden the refrigerator starts doing something anomalous that it's never done before, or it's got incoming or outgoing data egress, our device is going to shut that off of the internet. It's not going to turn your refrigerator off, obviously, but it'll shut the traffic down immediately if it's doing something out of the ordinary. And that's one of the big advantages of having AI incorporated into our system, where it's not going to be just looking strictly at ingoing and outgoing. It's going to look at internal connections within the network to see if all of a sudden my refrigerator is trying to talk to my thermostat, which it shouldn't be doing, or any other thing. It's going to mark that as anomalous and block it.
Oh, so you have artificial intelligence actually embedded your products as well, too?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
You have artificial intelligence embedded into your product line as well,
That's
also?
right. That's what
Oh,
we're in the
okay.
stress testing point right now. We just are announcing that strategic relationship.
Wow, okay, I didn't know that. That'd be great news if it, let me know when that happens. Now, I noticed on your website that, you offer cybersecurity insurance with these products. How does that work?
Well, we're the first company to do this. We were approached by Assurant Insurance Company. One of our directors on our board of directors is an insurance executive. And cybersecurity insurance is, historically has been really not a lot more than filling out a paper form and then getting coverage. Now it's been getting more and more in depth as far as the insurance company wanting to probe and see what kind of security you have on your networks, because cybersecurity breaches are expensive. When your data gets let go and you've exposed clients, customers, whoever, to data breaches, the lawsuits and everything that follows are very expensive. So what we've done is we built a built-in wizard into our product so that when you put the product on, and this is only available on our North American sold units right now, but we're looking at going international. But when you go in and you set the system up, it will run its typical audit that it will usually do. It'll inventory all the assets and devices on the network, and then it'll come up with a list of critical CVEs. So if you have six or seven critical CVEs that have to be cleared, once you clear those CVEs and you get what's called an all green report, the appliance itself will automatically open up the bridge to the insurance company to begin the process of issuing an insurance policy. And we're confident in our products, and we pay for that insurance. We pay the master policy on that insurance company. We don't charge the customer for it. So that's how confident we are, and that's how confident Assurant Insurance is with our product, because it gives them a much better feel for what the network is and if it's protected. They know that before they, authorize the policy, that the network has been cleared by the NetShield NAC devices, and they know that there's ongoing monitoring going on with the appliance. And if somebody turns the appliance off and they're breached, the audit report's going to show that. So that would also help protect the insurance company to make sure that those networks stay protected, the customer keeps the units turned on.
Now, we know that cybersecurity insurance is becoming just as important, like medical insurance and car insurance. I don't know of a lot of companies that have actually taken out cybersecurity insurance. What is your general perspective on that? Do you think it's going to be like the hot thing for 2019 for companies to do now, whether they buy
It's going to
products or
be
not?
the fastest growing insurance market there is. We're seeing daily the breaches that are coming out, and then the huge awards that are going on and the cost for mitigating those breaches. And we offer, depending on the product, you buy up to $250,000 insurance. So for some of our larger clients, that $250,000 isn't their full the full bill on their insurance, but what it does is it does cover the deductible on multi-million dollar policies. But if you're a smaller company, that may be more than you need for it. So we have it, the assurance available. It's popular with our clients, and it's popular with the insurance company because they're protecting their investment in the network.
Wow, excellent. Now, what kinds of customers actually have used your products? Do you have any customer success stories that you'd like to share with us, or any case studies?
Oh, we have a lot of them. You can actually go to our website to read them. We have white papers posted there from different ones, but Capital City Bank down in Florida is one of our bigger ones, where we've got about 80 units deployed across their branches across Florida, and they also run one of our units, it's an enterprise unit that acts as the command console for all the smaller units across their networks.
Okay. Now,
we're also in banks and things. We're in banks and things in England and Ireland and all over the place.
Wow, excellent. Can you elaborate a little bit more on those, if you're allowed to, or?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be best just to go to the website to read those white papers, but there are several. I mean, every time that we go out to deploy our products, and we do a lot of proof of concepts and things like that, and typically when we go in to do a POC, we'll ask the client, do you know what's on your network? And you always get kind of a nervous laugh from their IT people saying, well, I think so. And the fact of the matter is that almost always they end up finding things on their network they didn't even know were there. We've had cases with, servers that they thought were disconnected and gone were actually up and running and plugged into a closet somewhere. We found wireless networks that were set up on business networks that nobody even knew the thing was there running, so that people were able to use their wireless devices but gave a wide open access into the company's network. There's been a lot of those things where we've found, in one case, we found units were actually calling back to another country at night, and this was on a financial institution's machines, and calling to a company and reporting what the activity was for the day. So, yeah, there's a lot of success stories out there for things, but NACs are, network access controllers are a fact of life now, and a lot of companies are looking to them for their basic security.
Sure, excellent. Now, have you done any work with ransomware or business email compromise or spear phishing?
Yep. Yes, we have. We created what we call a precognition engine that deals with phishing attacks and preventing them from turning into actual breaches. We're members of the Anti-Phishing Working Group, the APWG, and we use their list of 3 million known phishing links to create basically a bloom filter of bad URLs. So with NetShields installed, clicking any phishing link takes the offending device off the network, preventing it from downloading malware, ransomware, or sending private information to the malware server completely.
Okay. Now, obviously, there are many other vendors out there, many types of cybersecurity vendors here in the U.S. What separates you from the rest of the crowd? Why, in other words, why should a customer say, hey, I'm going to come to you first versus company XYZ?
We have different competitors within our market. None of us does exactly the same thing. Everybody's got something a little different. Where NetShield really shines is, in particularly for the SMB, is we're very affordable. We are very easy to deploy. Our units are easy to use, and that's what we really pride ourselves on. And the fact that our support consistently gets rave reviews from all of our customers, that, we're responsive. We when they have things, that specialty items that they want done, or if they want, alterations made, we have a very responsive engineering department that jumps in there and works with them. But we've been very proud of the way that we're accepted within the market, and we're looking to grow. And we've got great opportunities to grow, particularly with the MSPs and managed service providers. And we're getting a lot of interest from them now about carrying our unit because it is so easy to deploy. And if they're running managed services for multiple different companies, we're an easy addition for them to put in.
Okay. Now, talking about growth, can you elaborate a little bit more, please, on your Series A funding? Have you received any interest from investors yet, or that's still the very beginning stages?
No, we just recently started this about 10 weeks ago. We've got four companies into due diligence, and we are into negotiation stage with the fifth. So, yeah, we've got people that are interested in us, and we're eagerly looking forward to bringing that funding in to expand our engineering section and our marketing and sales departments.
Excellent. Sounds great. Congratulations on that. Now,
thank you.
Do you offer any free trials or any types of free risk assessments for your customers before you onboard them?
Yeah, we run proof of concepts all the time. Matter of fact, we have a full inventory just of proof of concept appliances that are all over the place. And we have several based over in Czechoslovakia, Germany, Poland, UK, where they're almost always out on POCs. And then we also have another inventory here in the US that we use. And typically we'll go in and do a POC demonstration from usually a minimum of about 2 weeks, sometimes up to 4 weeks, so people get a chance to see what the product does, how easy it is to work with. They can see the information they're getting back from it, and those frequently lead to final sales.
Okay. Can you elaborate a little more on your partner program and your VAR, Value Added Reseller Program, and how one could possibly join your company?
Yep. We are a channel-driven company, so we have got resellers all over the place. You can go to our website and click on the partner link, and that'll walk you through the process for coming on board. We offer very nice discounts to our resellers, and based on the amount that they're selling and the size of their customer base. So it's a very good program, and we are, like I said, 100% reseller.
Yeah, it sounds excellent. Now, let's just kind of segue the last part of the show here onto the cybersecurity landscape in general. Not to get political here, but, you know, we keep hearing about nation-state threat actors like North Korea, China, Russia. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, right now, I think that that's probably one of the biggest threats that this country faces. When I was running the emergency management for the state of Wisconsin, you know, everybody worries about, is their home computer going to get hacked, when in fact what we were worried about was, is the power grid going to be taken down, or is somebody going to be able to hack into a nuclear plant? I mean, you don't have to look back very far to see, you know, the effects that cyber attacks can have. I mean, if it's out in public now, but Stuxnet was a very well-kept secret where government-sponsored hackers broke into the Iranian nuclear programs and put a very simple program in there called Stuxnet that overspun the centrifuges. It wore them out and set the Iranian nuclear program back for a decade. So when you look around at the other things that are very, very vulnerable, and in particular in the United States, it's our power grid. You can take the country off its feet with a dramatic hit on the power grid. So I think that, you know, the cyber threat landscape is not going to get any better. It's going to get continually worse. We know that foreign governments are actively training people to hack into other companies and other governments. So we've got to be ready for that. And we fully believe that, you know, a layered approach to network security is what's needed. Is NetShield the only answer you need on your network? Absolutely not. We work well, though, with firewalls, with antiware, anything that you can put onto your network to create multiple layers of protection. That's how you're going to defeat these folks, because it seems like as soon as we figure out one way to defeat them, they figure another way to get in. And that's what's nice about our units. Our units don't work at layer 3, which is where a lot of the firewalls and the antiware works. We work at layer 2, which is the physical layer. Very, very hard to spoof through the physical layer, and that's why we're so effective in what we do. We're not sexy, but we work.
Gotcha. Sounds great. Now, apart from the Series A funding, do you have any other plans for expansion in the next few years? Or?
Yeah, the Series A funding is what's going to help us to expand. We've already identified new space right here in Nashua. We're going to be basically doubling the size of our footprint with a dedicated QA lab that's going to be twice the size of what we have now. We've got plenty of plans to expand, and we work with the MSPs. We've got several MSPs we work with. They've got different requirements that they're asking us to engineer into our product. So we need that quality assurance and that engineering and developer lab where we can work these things out and introduce new products as we go forward.
Now, as we talk about, the cyber threat landscape is going to be changing like almost every minute, almost every second. Mm-hmm. How do you keep up with all this? How does NetShield keep up with this constant barrage of attacks and
It's difficult. I mean, the best thing we can do as a cybersecurity community is work together. You know, when you talk about things like, you know, we belong to the APWG with, you know, working groups that keep track of what are the threats that are there. And, you know, when I look at what's coming at us, the availability of free SSL certificates from Let's Encrypt and others, while a net positive for website developers, means that malware authors can easily hide their activities under a layer of encryption, making detection techniques that they rely on for packet analysis nearly impossible. You know, behavioral analysis is becoming a more favored approach, especially techniques powered by machine learning. That's where the biggest threat's going to be.
Okay. Now, we talked about this before, but just how do you think the cyber threat landscape is going to change, like, in the coming years? So let's look past beyond 2019. Let's look at the next mm-hmm. decade. What do you think that could look like? I mean, we talked about critical infrastructure. We talked about IoT. Is connectivity going to be a big theme now here in the next decade or so? Or?
You know, I think if I had to point to one thing that's going to be the biggest cybersecurity threat coming at us, it's going to be social engineering. That's going to always be the biggest danger because users can always be persuaded to work around security measures for the sake of convenience. And I saw that in government work where my own employees would ignore the warnings that were put up in front of them, and they would go on to do, you know, stupid stuff with their network computers that left us vulnerable. You know, on a more technical level, I'm interested to see what's going to go on with, you know, Meltdown and Spectre, the fiasco that would bring. No exploits have been reported in the wild, but if an exploit can be implemented in JavaScript, most corporate desktops would be immediately at risk. So, I mean, that's where I see the biggest cyber threats coming in the future.
Okay. What are your thoughts like on cryptojacking? I mean, I've written some blog posts on that, like blockchain. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's going to be no big threat coming down the road here? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yes, it will. We aren't doing a lot with blockchaining right now. We will be going down the road, but, you know, blockchain is got vulnerabilities, is just as everything else does. But, yeah, that can be a problem.
Okay. So, actually, just to answer my next question, when you think of next cyber, what the biggest cyber threat will be, do you have any other thoughts on what other big cyber threats could come out there? You said social engineering, but is there anything else that, you know, the audience needs to be aware of? Like, would ransomware be one or anything like that? Or,
you know, we're seeing an expansion in the use of ransomware, and we've seen some pretty highly publicized cases of it with you know, even cities and towns being held ransom. So I think you're going to see that increase, but I think you're going to also see a pretty dramatic uptick in the level of cybersecurity measures that we're going to see, especially in governments. You know, businesses already got a pretty good idea what's going to happen, and they're trying to protect themselves the best they can. Their ransomware exposure is one thing, but for businesses, the biggest worry is going to obviously be data exfiltration and losing, you know, financial data, et cetera, on their customers. But cybersecurity is the soft underbelly of our society, unfortunately, and we have the most to lose. It's, you know, as I said, I ran the Division of Criminal Investigation in Wisconsin, and when you think about, you know, robberies and homicides and all of those things, the level of damage that can be done through cybersecurity breaches and wiping people out financially, wiping companies out financially, it's got an enormous impact, and we've got to, you know, build ourselves up against that.
Okay. Now, we keep hearing about the C-suite, you know, like holding C-level execs more accountable here, and, you know, that's going to be a big hot topic. It was this year. What are your thoughts on that? Mm-hmm. Like, is holding C-suite more responsible, more accountable for the cybersecurity defenses of their organizations that they lead?
Sure. Well, I think that part of the problem is that we've seen in the past is the folks in the C-suite have got to kind of balance what am I paying and what's the net return on it. So nobody wants to have to go out and tell, you know, their stockholders that they spent $5 million on cybersecurity and, by the way, we didn't get breached at all. On the other hand, the chances for breach are so much higher now, I think, that people really are starting to get it. Where before you used to get pushback, I think, from stockholders and folks that you were spending a lot of money on cybersecurity, where sometimes C-suite people said, well, I'm just willing to take that risk. And I think that you're seeing them less and less inclined to take a risk, because it doesn't take long to understand that if you're the CEO or the CTO of a company that has a major breach and data is exfiltrated on your clients, and especially financial or personal data, the damage it's going to do to your reputation as a company and to your sales and everything associated with that is going to be exponentially higher. So I believe, and I have a feeling from speaking with different CEOs, that they're all in on cybersecurity for the most part, and they just want to make sure that they're keeping up with whatever the newest, you know, the newest iteration of protection is going to be. And it does change rapidly.
Okay. Now, as we wrap up our show, as a cybersecurity specialist, what do you recommend for people in general and organizations to do to protect themselves from cyber attacks? I mean, anybody can Google how to protect yourself, but from your experience, what do you recommend to people? What can you tell our audience today? How to avoid a phishing attack, or how not to become a victim of a ransomware attack? Like, what are your top mm-hmm. two or three things that you would recommend?
Well, here's what I would say. My experience is there are no silver bullets. So if you know, I've talked to people who think that they go out and buy Symantec and or load McAfee on their computer, that they're protected. That's not the case. And so with no silver bullets, you have to figure out what are the bullets you do want in your protection. And we firmly believe that a layered approach is the best way to go. So you want a firewall. You want a network access controller like we make. You want endpoint protection. You want IDS, IDP, and SIEM, which, you know, with SIEM, and we work very well with SIEM situations, you're basically that orchestrates the responses that you're going to see across your network. And that ensures that the vast majority of attacks are detected and blocked at some level. So my encouragement for people is not to go with one solution, it's to go with multiple solutions. You have to gauge that and implement it based on the size of your network, obviously, but then be smart about what you do and make sure that you have as many of those angles covered as you can. But layered approach is the best way to go.
Okay. Ed, well, we thank you very much for your time this afternoon, and we look
My
forward
pleasure.
To speaking
thank
with you
Thank you, Davi.
In the near future.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Have a great night. Bye now.